Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on Demand.
All right, here we go.
Every sport under the sun and then some, except for women's contact checkers. And even then, we'll consider it. This is Joey Vendetta on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
2 minutes after 10 o'clock. It is Tuesday, July the 26th. It is a hot one. Make sure you hydrate. I say that a lot, but that's only because I care. High of around 27, maybe get to 30. Depends. The Humidex is always a wild card. Some showers later this week. Hopefully we'll hold off, but definitely getting some on the weekend. Maybe get some in the next couple of days, but only based on whether we need to cool off or not. There is a ton to get to recap, to reset the program. My name is Joey Vendetta. We had Greg Vanney on from the TFC, Joe Siddle talking Blue Jays, and there's a lot to talk about with the Blue Jays. By the way, have you seen the game in 4K? It's pretty amazing. I have to say, I mean, there are times when I'm operating this program with oven mitts, or at least the Vendetta production posse, known as Brandeo and McKenzie, are operating with oven mitts. This 4K, pretty mind-blowing. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of when CDs came out versus albums, and you were able to hear things that you didn't hear before. But then, of course, they started skimping on CDs, and the quality went down, and, well, look at where we are now. Kids are saying, what is a CD? Why are you talking about that? All right, to recap, Argos beat the Alouettes 30-17. Ricky Ray hurt late in the game but was lighting it up. The IOC, we talked about this yesterday, let Russia stay. But what about the story in Rio? And we're going to talk to Jason Lacanfora here in a second, CBS Sports NFL Insider. A bunch of stuff going on in the National Football League. And as you just heard from Andrew Nye on the updates, the Canadian Football League, say what you want about its popularity, but its progressiveness is second to none. The commissioner's black. They just denied Saskatchewan the ability to place Greg Hardy, who's a bad dude. Greg Hardy is a bad dude. All right, played for the Dallas. Even the Dallas Cowboys don't want Greg Hardy. Now, it's as much for a drop-off in performance as it is for the fact that he's a bad guy who throws girlfriends on beds, allegedly, with machine guns, allegedly, right? But the fact that the CFL has denied, and Greg Hardy was working out with the Jacksonville Jaguars, which, again, do we want to give people a second chance? Of course we do. We love to see people repatriated, rehabilitated. But when a guy's a bad guy, and we're going to talk about Alden Smith, too, because he's not only a bad guy, he is a dumbass. What do I mean by that? Well, if you haven't heard the audio of allegedly Alden Smith and a woman smoking the blunt, right? If you haven't heard this, we're going to play in a minute. We'll get to Jason Lacanfora, but more importantly, let's get to a couple of phone calls here because your contributions, your fine contributions to this program are incredibly important. You can hit me on Twitter, at Radio Vendetta, and of course, the phone line's wide open. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your Rogers cell phone. Let's go to Keith in Toronto. Keith, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A good Tuesday morning to you. How are you today?
I'm good, Joey. How are you?
I'm fantastic. What do you think of this deal? I like the deal. I know he's not a left-handed bat. I know we would like Jay Bruce, but ultimately this is a deal in my mind that is kind of, you're hedging here, right? You're not giving up any roster players. They're picking up a bunch of salary and you're getting a very useful piece. What do you think?
Does it make him better?
I think so.
So there's your answer. I mean, really, I listen to you guys all the time, and I don't call in that often. But when I look at this, I mean, when I'm old enough to remember, you know, the Alomar years and the Joe Curry years, and there is no doubt that when that team stepped on the field, the other team were like, okay, we have to play our best tonight. And I think he makes them stronger. And I hope from a fan standpoint that this makes the guys that are free agents coming up say, holy crap, if I take $25 million as opposed to $30 million, I could win a couple of championships if I stay here. And we can keep this team together and we can do back-to-backs and we can get all that stuff, because I think in professional sports, the ultimate goal is the ring. Like, if you're not playing to win and be consistent, then why not? And I think this helps everybody.
Yeah, you have to look at it from the standpoint of they've got assets to manage. They have an issue. The Blue Jays have an issue in the minor league. They're not one of the top minor league systems right now. They have to replenish that. Okay, so start there. Do you want to raid your minor league closet and give up prospects? It looks like it's going to be a single-A prospect, which I guess is about as low risk as you're going to get. And you're not giving up a roster player. You're picking up a useful piece. Again, not a left-handed bat, a right-handed bat, not a pitcher. But again, the trade deadline, the non-waiver trade deadline is at the end of the month. So there's still some time here. And who knows if this is it precludes another deal. We'll touch more upon that in a second, but we're going to talk some NFL now. Joining us now, at Jason LaConfora on Twitter. He is a huge music guy. He is a huge Baltimore Orioles fan, but he's also hugely, massively knowledgeable about the National Football League. Jason, thanks for being on the show. How are you this morning?
I'm well. How's everything in T.O.?
It is hot, it is muggy, and there's nothing to complain about, because you know what people are like. They just like to complain, so when it's too hot, they complain, and then in February, it's too cold. So
you can't please everybody.
Yeah, you're in Baltimore, right?
Yeah, it's sweltering here. It's like 100 degrees. It's not fun. But, hey, you know that. It's how we roll in the summertime here, so gotta go with
it. You swelter, and of course, I know last night, Orioles winning again. I know you're a big fan. The AL East is incredibly tight, and the Orioles look like they're kicking tires on a bunch of different stuff, and who knows? They may end up with the pitcher who's pitching against the Blue Jays tonight in Andrew Cashner. It seems like they're at least one of the front runners, and he's going against Marcus Stroman. What do you think about the before we talk football, about the AL East and your Orioles' chance to win it?
I wanted Melvin Upton. I mean, the idea of dumping Ubaldo's contract, Ubaldo Jimenez, who's been an abject failure, for Upton, who, you know, we lost Joey Rickard, kind of our fourth outfielder, defensive guy, speed guy. I would have loved to get Upton. It's a second year in a row Duquette's been outsmarted by the team that he wanted to go to, you know, 20-some months ago. Last year it was Ben Revere, and he was telling people in the warehouse here in Camden Yards, we got Revere. Well, obviously, they didn't get Revere. And this Upton thing, they were talking, you know, privately pretty confidently about it, but it broke down. And, he's played very well this season. He's been horrible. He was horrible in Atlanta, but it's a quality outfielder and one more bat. A guy will probably get some timely hits. So we'll see if the Orioles get Rich Hill or someone like that if they're able to upgrade their pitching. But I thought it was going to be Baltimore and Toronto. I don't really buy Boston, even with Pomerantz. I think they're very feast or famine, and I'm just not sold on that team. I don't think Big Poppy maintains this pace through the heat of the summer. We'll see. I think it's Toronto and Baltimore who will slug it out for this division.
All right, let's talk some National Football League. First and foremost, off the top, the police blotter is always very active, and Josh Gordon has now been reinstated, still suspended for 4 games, but he gets to work out with the team. He gets to be involved in team activities. Tom Brady, on the other side of the coin, can't even play catch if Rob Gronkowski comes to his house for a barbecue. Let's talk about those two things. First, with Josh Gordon. Gordon played at Baylor with RG3. Yeah. How much of a factor do you think that is? Is RG3, this is, Hugh Jackson's got quite the reclamation project, and the Browns are a team that have been perennial losers. What do you think happens this year in Cleveland? Is RG3 salvageable?
I just don't know if he's able to stay healthy, right? I mean, the first thing you look for, and if you're going to have productivity, then you need to have availability, right? Will he be available? It's the first thing you have to look for. Will he even be available when Josh Gordon comes back? You know, that's a significant if, especially when you're talking about someone like Griffin, who hasn't played regularly since he got hurt in the playoffs there. I mean, it's been one thing after the other. with him. And then Gordon as well. Josh Gordon hasn't played football in a long time. He hasn't played productive football since 2013. Do I think he walks in day one, week five, with this cast of misfits and that offensive line and looks like the guy who had 1,500 receiving yards 3 years ago? I don't believe so. And if you look at the last time he came back from a significant layoff, it was an abject failure. He never got going. I mean, he couldn't run the routes. He was grossly out of shape. So, you know, I don't know that he comes in week five and is a difference maker. And by the time he gets himself, his legs under him, let's conservatively say it's the end of October. At the midpoint of the season, what is that team going to have to play for? And at what point does Hugh Jackson want to get a look at Kessler, who he took in the draft, some would say 3 or 4 rounds higher than he had to? So, I don't know. You know, I don't know about this great Baylor synergy ever really taking place. I have a hard time really gambling or betting on the Browns doing much positive. I think Vegas has it about right with them at 4 wins, Josh Gordon or not. I just hope Josh Gordon can stay out of trouble. I hope that he can slowly work his way out of this, you know, severely draconian drug policy that seems to punish players much more than it does rehab them. And I hope this kid can salvage his career, and whether that's long-term in Cleveland or elsewhere, and for him, I think elsewhere will probably make sense over time. You know, I'm rooting for him to come out of this on the other end, but I don't think it drastically sways the pendulum for the Browns.
Okay, and before we talk about weed, the pot, the chronic, the NFL seems to have this insane policy. You're allowed to inhale all kinds of opiates all day long.
Oh,
but
shoot
you
them
smoke
up with Toradol, right? Just get them to the show, whatever it takes. Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. So Le'Veon Bell, who missed, I don't know what the actual number of drug tests are, but there's a lot of Steeler fans listening. Le'Veon Bell, for the second year in a row, is going to be suspended without actually having been, quote-unquote, convicted, right? Like, he wasn't even convicted of anything, but he's such a dumbass that he misses his drug test, which leads me to believe that he had something to hide. But look, let's backtrack here. As you said, Toradol, all kinds of painkillers. We know what a societal problem prescription drugs are with the public, right? Doctors just pump it out. The pharmaceutical companies are what they are. Why is the National Football League so intransigent with their marijuana policy when, as we all know, guys are taking all manner of opiates?
Well, and in this country, in the U.S., you can walk down the street in Seattle or Denver, which last I checked had NFL teams, and smoke a pot, you know, smoke a joint, and you're fine. I mean, if you spent any time in those cities, and they're not the only places where it's legal, I mean, it smells like, you know, freshman year fraternity house party. So just on any random street. So at a time where it's being decriminalized increasingly in this country, at a time where more and more independent, medically renowned institutions are spending ample dollars investigating just how much pain relief there is that could come from this, just how much those who've experienced acute head trauma, like, oh, by the way, NFL players are contractually obligated to do so, what it might mean for them post-playing career, what it might mean for their brains and dealing with the aftermath of concussions. Of all times for the league to be so stuck in, I don't get it. I don't think them playing morality cop is making less kids smoke drugs or smoke pot. You know, I don't buy the argument that, oh, well, pot is a gateway drug and all of that. I just don't think it's the NFL's job to be in everybody's den and living room and whatever, bong room, worried about what they're doing. If you get caught, like Le'Veon Bell, as you said, stupid, got caught in a car with LeGarrette Blount with pot in the car, okay, you get yourself in legal trouble related to drugs, then you should be tested and you should be in the program. But the idea that every year we're going to take 350 kids at the combine, you know, age 20 to 22, and test them, and then, ooh, try to catch them and get them into our drug program right away so that they can lose paychecks and they can lose money and they can lose their careers and teams could lose their competitive balance over marijuana? I just don't know what they're gaining. I don't get it. I wrote a column yesterday, and I've written this column seemingly the last 3 or 4 off seasons. Like, what am I missing here, right? You want to pretend that you care? Test for pot the way you test for HGH. Everybody knows you don't care about HGH. You've got such a small sample size, you're not even trying to catch anybody. But you could still say, well, we're casting a net. It's not a very wide net, but we are testing for it. Have those same sample sizes for marijuana and get out of these guys, you know, bedrooms and dens and living rooms. And if they get themselves in trouble through drugs, by all means, prosecute them, whatever. Throw the book at them. But the idea that we're wondering who's where and, oh, my goodness, the guy went on vacation and forgot to tell the drug tester and they showed up at his house and he wasn't there, or somebody called and said, you want to go to Vegas, and then he gets a call from the drug guy who says, we're going to test you tomorrow. Like, it's just, who's winning? Like, what am I missing? Like,
yeah,
I don't get it.
It makes complete sense. And just to let you know, because I know you're such a huge O's fan, the word is that Baltimore offered Jimenez and two minor leaguers to the Padres, and the deal broke down over finances, meaning
I'm still
that,
with money with Angelos. Yeah, I mean, I figured it had something to do with how much they wanted the O's to eat of a Baldo's contract, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that probably had a lot to do. And the Blue Jays have given up a prospect, a 19-year-old right-handed pitcher, who is number 18 on the prospect list. So, look, it looks like, as you said, the Jays, prospect is Hansel Rodriguez for Upton. So, again, the Blue Jays get a little bit more flexibility, but I think Baltimore is going to have to make some sort of a deal for a starting pitcher. Just it's really a seller's market right now. And you look at Aroldis Chapman going to the Cubs. Now, they may sign him 4x15, right? They may sign him for a $60 million deal.
Right.
That's the word. But he is a absolute game changer from the standpoint that this guy might help end the longest World Series drought ever.
Well, he's there for October. Yeah, I mean, look, they're winning by five runs every night, so you're not going to see a whole lot of him in August and September. You know, they're going to run away with that division. But he'll be pitching every night in October, and if he pitches well, then, you know, they've got a great chance of ending the biggest jinx in professional sports. So I get why they made that trade. They should make that trade 10 times over, and they've got a strong farm system, and the future's now for them. As for the Orioles, we'll see. Dan Duquette hasn't done his best work at the trade deadline, so I'm kind of a bit of a skeptic when it comes to them. But a left-handed reliever, a guy just to get lefties out, an innings eater, that would be great. But as you say, the market, it's very difficult. It's tough sledding to get a pitcher. So if instead they buy Jay Bruce on the cheap, or they get an Upton on the cheap, I'm not opposed to that either. Because at the end of the day, even if they get a Rich Hill or whomever, yeah, the starting pitching's been good this week, but they're going to have to outmash people to win in the postseason.
All right, let's finish up here with a couple more points on the NFL training camps getting underway this week. I know when do you hit the road to actually go around, and how many training camps do you hit?
Oh, boy, I've hit as many as 24 some years. I think this year I'll see at least half the league, but some things are still in flux. I'll start here in Baltimore. Their veterans are on the field. What's today? Tuesday? Thursday?
Yeah.
Spend a couple days here, and then I'll get up to Pittsburgh. I'll get down to Richmond where the Redskins are. I think I'll get to West Virginia where the Saints are. Those are all drivable. Then I'll pick off a few teams in the Midwest, starting with the Colts. I'll fly down to Florida next week as well and spend some time with the Dolphins and the Jags. I'll come back up here for a preseason game with the Ravens and the Panthers. And then I head out west. I'll be in San Diego for, I think, 3 days. The Chargers and Cardinals are holding joint practices. I'll probably drive up to Orange County where the Rams are holding their camp for a day. I'll go up to Seattle, spend a couple days with them, and then come back east and regroup. Then I think I'll hit the Eagles, Jets, Giants, maybe the Lions. So I don't know. How many teams is that?
I lost count at 11, pal. So
yeah,
it's not
right. So you make the most of it. It's tough these days, though. I have to say, under this new collective bargaining agreement with no two-a-days and these mandatory days off after 5 days of practice, and then the preseason schedule gets going, so teams are off the day before they play the preseason game. Then they play the preseason game. Then they're off the day after the preseason game. All of a sudden, it's hard to find 3 straight days where teams are practicing and you can actually get there, you know, within driving distance. It gets tough.
It is 10:20. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Joey Vendetta. Our guest is Jason LaConfora. You can follow him on Twitter at Jason LaConfora, CBS Sports NFL Insider. Okay, quickly, some storylines here. J.J. Watt, back surgery, might not be ready for the beginning of the season. I'm going to go through a quick roll call here. How much does that affect the Texans, and does Jadeveon Clowney ever step up for this team?
I like the way Clowney was coming on. Now he's got to stay healthy. So I think a Watt-Clowney, had they been together healthy from week one, could have been absolutely devastating. As for Watt, I would not put a time frame on that. You're talking about a back. You're talking about a huge human being and nerves being involved and a herniated disc. They will take every precaution bringing him back.
Mark Sanchez, the dirty Sanchez. We know the Jays fans love Aaron Sanchez. I don't know how much Bronco fans are going to love Mark Sanchez replacing a legend in Peyton Manning. They got a great defense. They've re-signed the guys that they needed to re-sign. We know that there was a franchise tag and there was an issue there with Von Miller, and they got him done. But how much of a drop-off is this for Denver, and how much is this going to affect this team? Do they have a shot at defending with that incredible defense?
As long as he doesn't throw 30 picks, it's not really a drop-off. Go look at their quarterback play last year. The only team in the league that collectively, all quarterbacks combined, had worse quarterback play really across the board than the Broncos last year was the Rams. And if you recall, what a bleep show that was there.
Oh, brutal.
So, John Elway sees the formula there. It's, quarterback, just don't bleep it up, and we'll win with our defense. They think they'll run the ball even better than a year ago. I still think, at the end of the day, Lynch starts more games than Sanchez, and Lynch is playing by the midpoint of that season, if not sooner. They won a Super Bowl without a quarterback. Don't kid yourself. That was Trent Dilfer last year. I mean, that was the Ravens winning a Super Bowl without a quarterback. Denver did the same thing last year. People don't look at it that way because they think of Peyton Manning as the legend that he was. He lost his job to Brock Osweiler last year. Let's just keep that in mind.
Okay, Pittsburgh Steelers, as we discussed, Le'Veon Bell being suspended. But between Bell and Roethlisberger, they both missed a combined 15 starts last year.
Yeah.
They've lost Martavis Bryant, who they were looking to step up big time here. And it looks like it's going to be Ben and Antonio Brown and D'Angelo Williams and the Steelers. What do you think the prospects are for the Steelers having to deal with a Le'Veon Bell suspension again and no Martavis Bryant?
I'm bullish on the Steelers. I don't know that any team has drafted wide receivers in the second round and later as well as them. You can go back to Mike Wallace and where they got him and how much bang for their buck they got out of him. They like the kid Coates. They have upgraded exponentially from an athletic standpoint at the tight end position. Now, with Darius Green and the way they're going to be able to move him and the way Todd Haley likes to use his tight ends, he's just so much more athletic and agile than Heath Miller, as much as Heath has meant to that franchise over the years, and certainly he's an all-time favorite Steeler if you talk to their fan base. But no, I think they'll be fine even without Bryant for the year, and even without if it ends up being four games for Le'Veon Bell. That's a team that if they're remotely healthy in December, look out. I think offensively they have a chance to be historically significant.
How bad are the Cowboys going to be this year?
Well, I think they'll be very good on offense, and I think they'll be very poor on defense. And look, mediocre is all you have to be in the NFC East. Really, even the years when they sent the a team to the Super Bowl and the Giants won the Super Bowl, most of those years, if you can get the 10 wins and win 5 games in your division against the right teams, you have a pretty good shot at having a home playoff game in that division. There aren't too many juggernauts. No one's been very good consistently. Again, even the Giants, between their Super Bowl appearances and since their Super Bowl appearances, they've done nothing. And they're sort of the gem of that division. So, no, it'll be a flawed, mediocre team that wins the NFC least again. And whichever one it is will probably go home in the first round of the playoffs. I think that's just the reality for the three teams that I think you could make a playoff case for. I can't make a playoff case for the Eagles.
We got about a minute here. Our guest is Jason LaConfora. Jason, thanks again for doing this. It's greatly appreciated. Two teams that had a coach, and then the coach went somewhere else. The Eagles, Chip Kelly was the guy who came in there. He was the mad scientist, and the whole thing blew up. Now Doug Peterson is in charge. Kelly is in San Francisco, where he's going to have to deal with either Blaine Gabbert or Colin Kaepernick as a starting quarterback, from what it looks like. And the Eagles look like they are not going to start Carson Wentz. Doug Peterson has said that. Either team, they both don't look like good situations.
No, they're not. I'll take the Eagles where they are in their rebuild. I think the Eagles hit rock bottom. with Jeffrey Lurie coming out on a Tuesday night in December and firing his head coach. I mean, this is a man who stood by Andy Reid for, you know, years and years and years and years when people wanted to run him out of town. I mean, he wanted to be loyal to Chip Kelly. For him to come out and whack that guy midweek before his third season ended, that's rock bottom. I'm not sure that the 49ers have hit rock bottom yet. Tom Sula, that was ugly, but things that could be much more ugly in a different way under Chip Kelly. But neither is a very tenable situation right now. Neither of those teams are primed to win with any consistency. But I'll take the way Lurie will reward his own players, the kind of extensions they've done to keep guys around and try to identify their young core. If they hit on any of these quarterbacks, whether it's Bradford or Chase Daniel or Wentz, then they're going to be fine. And again, they play in a pretty mediocre division. The 49ers, with Arizona and Seattle not going anywhere anytime soon, and the Rams owner actually caring about his team now that they live down the street from him in Malibu, yeah, good luck to the York family.
Yeah, and the Rams have sold out of season tickets as well, which is crazy considering they're playing in what's a bomb shelter known as the Coliseum before they move to the new building in 3 years. So, Jason, thanks a lot for being on the show, and we're going to get you to a Guns N' Roses show, pal. You're going
I'm
to a Guns N' Roses
out,
show.
Brother. I hope I can. Maybe they'll do an arena tour in the winter. I might have a better shot with that.
I'm sure they will. We'll let you know, and thanks again for doing this, pal. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, man. Thank you.
That is Jason Lackenfors, CBS Sports NFL Insider. A ton of insight from that guy. It is 27 minutes after 10 o'clock. I'm Joey Vendetta. What are we talking about today? We're talking about Melvin Upton Jr. is a Toronto Blue Jay. Will he be in the lineup tonight? Will he at least be on the bench tonight, considering all he has to do is walk across the hall? Is Aaron Sanchez a lock? Is he cemented into the starting rotation after that? Another incredibly dominant performance last night. Chris Sale, he's not remorseful about chopping up jerseys. In fact, he's still saying how it really wasn't his fault. Shapovalov beats Kyrgios, the 17-year-old wonder boy. Wow, did he look good yesterday, and he was cocky and confident, and I loved it. Bautista and Martin back in the lineup for the Jays, and they win 4-2. Again, tonight, it's Stroman on the mound for the Blue Jays. Kashner goes for San Diego, and of course, you can listen to it right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. But up next, a woman who is going to bring attention to the fact that it's not always about the way you look and being treated a certain way for it. When we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.
Hi, this is Dennis Shapovalov, and you're listening to Joey Vendetta on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
37 minutes after 10 o'clock, still to come in hour number three, Brad Richards. MVP, Stanley Cup champion, he's retired. We'll talk to him about his career and what he's doing now. Probably having a beer in the Hamptons. You ever been in the Hamptons? It's like Muskoka, but no one says A. All right, we're going to touch upon that, and we're going to talk to Tessa Virtue in a second here. Some pretty interesting things to get to. Chris Sale, he's not remorseful about chopping up jerseys. He really says it's not his fault. The IOC lets Russia stay in the Olympics. Rio is a mess. They're building complexes where the media stay on burial sites of slaves. There's people smoking crack. There's women prostitutes who are pregnant in the middle of the street, a mile from where the opening ceremonies are happening. But everything's fine. It's all going to be fine. The Cubs land Aroldis Chapman, and of course, the big story for Blue Jay fans, Melvin Upton Jr. looks to be a Toronto Blue Jay, and we've given up a prospect. A very young prospect. Will it come back to haunt us? Who knows? But are you concerned about it right now? No, you may be in the future. Hansel Rodriguez is a prospect, 19-year-old right-handed pitcher, rated 18th in the Blue Jays prospect pool. Joining us now on the phone is a woman that's won gold with her partner, Scott Moyer, at the Olympics in 2010, won silvers in 2014. It's my pleasure to welcome Tessa Virtue to the program. Tessa, thanks a lot for doing this. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm well. And you're promoting, it's interesting, right? Because we talk about this, and last night was the Democratic National Convention. You had Michelle Obama giving a pretty impressive speech. And it's interesting because in a country like the United States where you have, it's so polarized right now between the Republicans and the Democrats, and there's so much political correctness in the world, but there's also still so much stigmatism, right? And you're an athlete that is bringing attention to it, and you look at what's been going on, and it's got to be, from your perspective, very interesting to deal with, and what you see in your travels, right? Because you have a world where it's an Instagram world, it's a Snapchat world, and everyone seems to judge people so quickly, and it boggles my mind that it's kind of that it's still like this. So talk about what you're doing with Dove Canada and your perspective on it.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, isn't it amazing that it's 2016 and we're still focusing on how women look before we're talking about their accomplishments or their skill sets? And what I love about this campaign with Dove, Have Your Say, is that it's giving women the opportunity to celebrate their beauty, whatever that may be in whatever capacity, and share their stories. And I think Dove is really challenging the media to change that commentary. And it'll be so interesting. You know, female athletes are going to be front and center in the coming months. And I'm really hopeful that the coverage in the media of female athletes in particular shifts to that focus that is on their accomplishments, their achievements on the playing field, as opposed to how they look.
And look, you can kind of take two sides of this, right? And if you're just joining us, Tessa Virtue is our guest, and that beauty is empowering to a certain degree, but it's also something that's used to judge female athletes and women in general. And more often than not, female athletes featured in the media are shown in passive poses, and men are much more action-oriented. I will definitely agree with that. But Tessa, on the other side of the coin, you will still have a world where a lot of women in sports, and again, we saw it, I can't remember, I think it was FIFA talking about you know, women's soccer and how pretty the U.S. team was, and they were talking first and foremost about how the U.S. women's soccer player, oh, look how beautiful she is. But meanwhile, she's just scored a great goal. And it's again, as you said, it's a stigma, and it's something that has to kind of be worked through. On the other side of the coin, there are still those female athletes who portray a glamorous image, and a lot of the times are showcasing their looks. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, don't you think?
Well, it is. And, you know, I understand that, and I'm in a sport where most of the time people see me in sparkles and glitter and costume and makeup and podiums, and it seems quite glamorous. So I'm very conscious of that, and I'm cognizant of how that may appear to particularly young females growing up and looking at the sport world. However, what people may not see, and maybe what they forget, is the countless number of hours that athletes put into their training, and to trivialize all of that hard work and to marginalize them by focusing on just their appearance, you know, it's too bad. And I think young women need role models, and we need to give those role models a platform from which to speak openly and honestly about their struggles. And this campaign, Have Your Say with Dove, is allowing everyone to do that. And not just those who are in the spotlight, but anyone. I'm loving reading the stories that are coming in with the My Beauty, My Say hashtag. And we can all relate. I mean, we're all suffering from low self-esteem. We all have body image issues. Everyone from Olympic athletes to, you know, CEOs of companies to, you know, you name it. We all have those issues. And I think it's just time that landscape changed a little bit.
Yeah, that's why when I like the ESPN, the body issue, when, you know, they put Vince Wilfork, who is a big boy, plays for the New England Patriots, and he's a guy who, well, actually played for the Texans, played for the New England Patriots for a long time, but, you know, Vince Wilfork is a great example of a guy that is huge and is overweight, quote unquote. He's only 6'2", but he's 330 pounds, and yet he was willing to show his body on the ESPN, the body issue. But again, you know, when you look at the way women are portrayed, they're and especially in this day and age of all these websites and all the different blogs and the sports blogs, every one of them, not every one of them, but a lot of them have the hot woman of the day. They have the featured, you know, hot athlete of the day. And it's whether it's women's soccer, whether it's tennis, whether it's a golfer, it's just unbelievable that this is still such a massive part of that business. And as a female athlete, how do you feel about that?
Well, no kidding. And it's really heartbreaking. I mean, truthfully, across the board, we're all striving for this unrealistic standard of perfection that just doesn't exist. I mean, even the models that we aspire to look like are photoshopped. They don't even look that way. So I love that Dove is embracing every kind of woman, and it's kind of about, you know, celebrating who you are, what makes you unique, and how do you find your confidence from, you know, chasing your dreams, finding what your passion is, working hard, you know, how do you get that beauty from the inside out? And I think athletes are in a really unique position. And, you know, I'm in a sport with subjective judging. So, of course, I'm judged. That's part of my job. But when that extends beyond my skill set on the ice and it gets personal, I just don't think that's okay.
Yeah, and I think the story I was referring to was when FIFA, on their website, FIFA.com, the quote was, "Alex Morgan is one of the most popular players in the USA women's football. A talented goal scorer with a style that is very easy on the eye and good looks to match. She is nothing short of a media phenomenon." And that's on the governing body website. To me, that kind of says it all, doesn't it?
Right, that does. That just encapsulates all of our struggles.
Yeah, and so, again, the hashtag is My Beauty, My Say, and it's good that you're drawing attention to this. I don't think that it's anything that's going to end soon. It's just an ongoing discussion, but the fact that attention is being drawn to it. Look, again, there are women who will use their looks to further their career, to make more money, to accelerate their position in their sport. But I think that if the woman is doing it on her own terms and she's okay with it, then I don't have a problem with it. I think the problems arise is when the objectification occurs, and that is done by a middle body or someone that is taking the image and perhaps using it in a manner that the woman is not comfortable with.
Absolutely. And Dove is actually launching a live billboard in Yonge and Dundas Square to broadcast real-time commentary from media outlets. And that will be really interesting. I mean, this topic is so relevant and so poignant at the moment, but they're going to spotlight media outlets that judge women on their appearance before their accomplishments. And they'll be right up there on this digital billboard in the center of Yonge and Dundas Square for everyone to see. And if that doesn't turn some heads, I don't know what will.
All right, before I let you go, the Rio Olympics, and we know that those are the Summer Olympics, but the Rio Olympics right now, we're hearing all kinds of different horror stories, and we kind of heard them in Sochi, right? We heard the same thing in Sochi. Buildings weren't ready. The accommodations weren't ready. The media got there and placed, you know, there were no light bulbs in some of the buildings. And Sochi, I won't say is a ghost town, but you see the images of whether it's Atlanta, whether it's Sochi. There's so many cities that when the Olympics come and go, it leaves a trail. And sometimes the trail is good, and sometimes the city benefits from it, and sometimes it's not so good. With Rio and the juxtaposition of that as the background, tell us about Sochi and the experience from an athlete's perspective and the accommodations, the organization, because we heard horror stories, but from your perspective, you went. What was it like?
Right. Yeah, it was interesting, the juxtaposition between kind of what I heard from the media perspective was going on and being relayed to all of those at home, and what I actually experienced as an athlete, which was, you know, a top-notch event that was so well-run, so well-organized. I mean, the Canadian team was very well taken care of, and it was a phenomenal game. It was truly a highlight. You know, I can only cheer for the Rio athletes. We've been training with a few of the divers heading there this week in Montreal, and we have a really strong Canadian team. You know, I know I'm going to be a basket case watching every athlete, but we'll all be connected and cheering for them, and I just wish them all the best. But, you know, there's always – the Olympics are always politicized, and you just hope that once things get underway, after opening ceremonies, that everyone can just focus on the sport.
Tessa Virtue is our guest, and you can follow her on Twitter, at Tessa Virtue. And before I let you go – okay, so you have an Olympic movement. You have Rio, where you are seeing kind of what's going on and how they may not be prepared. And it's coming up. It's starting in 10 days, whatever it is. From your perspective, as far as the last thing I want to ask you is as far as the way you interact with the IOC and the IOC testing and all that, how do you think their handling of the Russian doping results will impact athletes going forward? Do you think they handled it correctly? What's your take on it?
You know, it's a really tough thing. And of course, there's just the concern about the integrity of sport. I mean, we all want clean sport. We want the best in the world competing against the best in the world at their best being clean. And so that has to be protected. You know, it's hard to say. I just hope that the athletes training and competing, they'll be so focused on their one job. And I hope that they have their moment. And I hope that people still support the movement, get behind the games and cheer on our athletes, because that's really what's most important.
Tessa, thanks for doing this, and congratulations on being involved with a cause that is something that resonates with a lot of people, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to chat.
That is Tessa Virtue, Canadian Olympic skating champion, won gold, won silver, and has participated and has firsthand knowledge of what it's like. It's 10:51. It is Joey Vendetta coming up at noon. It's Baseball Central with the inimitable Kevin Barker and the irascible Mike Wilner. And, of course, after that, it's the Andrew Walker Show and then Primetime Sports. And then, of course, your Toronto Blue Jays tonight. Marcus Stroman on the mound for the Blue Jays. And Andrew Cashner, who's got to be looking over his shoulder on whether he may or may not be traded even before tonight's start. You would think they're going to let him start and then move him, but you never know. And, of course, Melvin Upton Jr. is now a Toronto Blue Jay. What are your thoughts on that? 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your Rogers cell phone. And if you're one of our good callers, right, I enjoy when we get great contributions from listeners. To me, that's kind of the most important part of the program. Whether you do it on Twitter, at Radio Vendetta, whether you do it on the phone, we may give you a pair of tickets. To what? Do you like to laugh? Do you like to have a good time? Well, the Oddball Comedy Festival is coming to the Molson Canadian Amphitheater, September the 4th. Should be pretty funny. Hosted by Jeff Ross and this really funny Italian comedian, Sebastian Maniscalco, along with Brian Regan and John Mulaney, and then a bunch of other comedians as well. And tickets are on sale at LiveNation.com, but I got a couple of pairs before noon. So don't be shy to call in with your take on Melvin Upton Jr. or whether Aaron Sanchez has cemented his place in the starting rotation. We have John Gibbons. We're going to hear this clip later about Gibbons. And as well, I got to get to this Alden Smith thing where he may or may not have posted a video of himself smoking the blunt. So we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back with more on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.